Jeffrey Epstein was using ancient sex magic rituals, and my next guest found evidence in the government's own Epstein Files release earlier this year. You can find out more about this in his documentary called Sex Magic. My guest is Taylor McMahon. His YouTube channel is My New Obsession. He investigates symbols that repeat across history in order to decode what is happening before our very eyes with the powerful elite. Now, when I watched his Epstein video, my jaw was on the floor. So, Taylor, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Happy to be here. I'm a fan, so this is fun.
Likewise. Like I said, I have your show on repeat now. And, you know, I studied the Epstein files, but what you rightly pointed out is a lot of us were focused on the illicit activity, young girls here, there, who was participating. But what you found was research about symbology and elite dark magic that has persisted through the ages. And I feel like you're one of the people who bring the most solid research to these theories that I've seen online. That's why I was so excited to talk to you. Can you start with how you found Epstein collecting these rocks with glyphs and how that led you through these sex magic rituals and dark magic?
Sure. Yeah. So it kind of started in two places. So the first thing that I noticed was actually the pillars. So that was when James O'Keefe released the photos of inside of Epstein's temple. It came back on my radar. At the time, I was like, oh, wow, he's definitely into deeper occult work, or at least religious symbolism than has been reported. And I thought to myself, well, yeah, somebody's going to make a good video about that. Kind of let it be. But then it came back into my radar because people in kind of my YouTube world of ancient Egypt and that sort of stuff were talking about these petroglyphs, and they didn't really have a great explanation for it other than he was collecting these things. So I was like, well, that's weird. I should probably look into that. So I started looking into it through this article with the Santa Fe New Mexican, where they just basically detail that he was stealing these ancient petroglyphs from nearby his home. His Zorro Ranch home is in the Galisteo Basin, which is kind of a center for these petroglyphs from the Pueblo people. And from there, I just couldn't figure out why he wanted it. Because if all it was him being interested in something odd and collecting it, he did it over close to 20 years, which didn't make sense to me. You would just go grab one and be done with it and put it in the front of your house or whatever you want to do. But he was particularly interested and spent a ton of time and resources trying to get these rocks. And I was like, there's something here. He's into weird stuff. And I at that point, I kind of looked at his temple and I was like, yeah, he's into something here. So I kind of started looking for occult or religious connections to the land in particular. And I didn't include this in the documentary, but I knew that through the lineage of Theosophy, which is kind of folds into, it's like a precursor to Crowley. It's a different type of occult lineage. They were interested in the Pueblo people because they have this idea of like ancient wisdom, right? That it can be found in these older religions or indigenous religions and things of that nature. And then pretty quickly, I figured out that he was close to the Trementina base. So the Trementina base, for those who are unfamiliar, it's this very odd building owned by the Church of Scientology. And what they do is they have all of L. Ron Hubbard's foundational writings on metal plates that they put inside of these like titanium capsules. And it's like this preservation effort of Hubbard's work. And I was like, that feels important to me. And I knew at that point that Hubbard was connected to Crowley, and Theosophy has some connections to Crowley. So I was like, I bet money that he is a Crowley guy. And from there, I just went through all of his purchases, all of his artwork, all of his, the design of his properties. And it was pretty overwhelming from that point forward, what exactly he was doing.
So you say Aleister Crowley is sort of the father of modern day occult magic. And can you explain some of the things that he did and what he was trying to do? It seems to me it was just power hungry. They were just searching what esoteric groups can I take from in order to feed my evil, like a Disney villain. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you know, it would probably take a full hour just to decode Crowley. Crowley functionally is the kind of modern origin of occultism. In reality, he's pulling from a lot of older traditions, but functionally, he is kind of the center point, the main figure that we're all aware of. And a lot of that is because of the press that surrounds him. But the order that he goes through a few different kind of groups that he is participating with to learn these traditions as a young man. And the first group that he's a part of is called the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. And the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, their purpose was essentially to ritualize all of this ancient magic. So they're mixing things like the Kabbalah, which is what you see, the Tree of Life, right? I don't know if you're familiar with that symbol. Yeah. But they mix that with pieces of Hermetic Kabbalah, which is pieces of Hermeticism. You get the Egyptian gods. They're mixing that with some Christian traditions. They mix and pull from everything. Tarot at that point. They use Freemasonry as kind of their structural foundation. So they are kind of mixing and matching what they like from all of these different traditions, and they're trying to ritualize it to actually make the magic functional in the actual world. They want to ritualize it where they can use it. So that is kind of the origin point of his ideas. And he did not start that group. He just joined that group. He ends up kind of taking over a different group later. But functionally, it is the beginning of what would people would think of as occultism. Starts with them. There's older stuff that they're pulling from, but functionally, that's where it starts.
And what do they want? They want power for themselves and also to control the masses? I know that's a simplistic question, but it's important because if Epstein was doing it, somebody's still doing it.
It's one of those questions that it's going to kind of depend. You know, what they would say is that they are interested in the purity of will and freedom and things of that nature. But, you know, this is kind of me speaking from my own viewpoint.
Sure.
They want otherworldly power. You know, they want access to the ability to effectuate real world change, to change the will of people and to change the subconscious minds of people using, you know, non-human entities, demons, anything that they can kind of conjure and summon, angels. They mix and match to try to just get whatever they can to effectuate real world change.
Okay. And in terms of Epstein, what kind of real world change do you think that he want? And I'm asking you to, you know, again, speculate, because you can see the symbols that show you what he probably was doing. I'm just asking, in general, what is the will of people who would do that, who would go to such dark lengths to do that?
You know, I've been thinking about this, and I would love to hear your ideas too, because it's not clear to me. So there's elements of this, and we can go into it later, but there's elements of what he was doing that was like fairly sophisticated. He had a real interest in this. Like, it's not a passing interest. It wasn't kind of, you know, LARPing, you know, yeah, Scary mystical guy. Would I go into with the documentary a little bit, and this is kind of my theory. I don't know what his end goal was, but I think these rituals function as a type of trust building exercise between these individuals. That's my theory, is that it functions as a way, if you participate in these things, it functions as a way of like, I have something on you, I have something on me. It's not traditional blackmail. It's more so like
a blood oath. We're
a blood oath. That's a great word. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what their ultimate goal is, but they certainly are representative of something deeper and much more sinister and larger than, I think, the base level, you know, intelligence work or anything of that nature. I would imagine that they want to control the world. You know, I mean, that's my speculation, but I don't know to what end specifically. But it's certainly
probably not in a good way for the rest of us.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So I guess, since you asked, something that I thought might have been the end goal, he was clearly interested in breeding humans. He was clearly interested in securing locations outside of government laws. And he mentions at some point sex tourism. And so the way that I saw that end goal is that you can have a place like Epstein Island where you have bred sex slaves or people who could be sacrificed to these rituals and have powerful people go to this place in order to pledge into this dark society. And the more powerful people who go there, the more you have control of the outcome of the world. That's my,
that's
the way I surmise.
You know, when y'all's producer reached out to me, I was like, you know, I should make aware that I'm not like a super Epstein knowledgeable guy. How is he interested in the breeding of humans?
Well, there's a few emails where he's talking about geneticism and projects to that effect. And I don't have them at my disposal, but I have seen them.
I was going to say, you know, part of the thing that I connect here is the ritual that one of Crowley's followers does with L. Ron Hubbard. So the guy's name is Jack Parsons. So Jack Parsons was a rocket scientist who goes on to form the Jet Propulsion Laboratories, which becomes NASA. So he's like an early NASA guy. And he performs a ritual in the style of Crowley's teachings with L. Ron Hubbard in Pasadena called Babylon Working. And their goal was to summon a Thelemic goddess. And Thelema is Crowley's religion, named Babylon, and they were going to birth this moon child, which would bring in the next age. So, I mean, they were certainly interested in things of that nature as well, whether it be sex or birth or ritualized sex to summon, you know, thought forms into beings or all these kinds of strange ideas. But that would make sense to me as well. I've not heard that, but that makes a lot of sense, actually. I mean, he was certainly interested in illicit sex and things of that nature.
Right. And the thing that brought him down was collecting these girls, because it became increasingly a problem to traffic the girls. And, it, you know, the way that he was discovered by the Justice Department in 2008, I believe, is that he was preying on girls who didn't have a dad or didn't have anyone watching over them. And mistakenly, they preyed on a girl who did, who told her parents and then went to the Justice Department. And so that is just me guessing, because he was interested in sex tourism and it was increasingly hard to, you know, fill your coffers with people that you could either sacrifice or sexually abuse or what have you.
Well, you know, it's interesting is, so I wrote this down here. I didn't put this in the documentary, but if you remember Vicki Ward, who did a lot of the original reporting for, on Epstein. So she was the reporter for Vanity Fair. She's kind of breaking the original odd finances, and then she ends up kind of stumbling into the sex stuff, and she breaks the story to the world. But when she was investigating Epstein and she had the opportunity to kind of sit with him for months and months,
yes,
she angered him, and this is a quote from her. This is in Capsule magazine. So this is what she said. She angered Epstein at one point. He said, "He then made threats about having a witch doctor place a curse on my unborn children. He wanted to know the exact hospital that I was giving birth and when, and it was upsetting that he had a dossier compiled on my husband and threatened that he could get me fired." So he was threatening the curses of witch doctors as early as, you know, 2002-ish.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is, it's another kind of piece of the puzzle that he was into this as early as, you know, and that's kind of when our story starts with the petroglyphs, and that's in 2001. Yeah, starts in 2001. That's the first email.
Okay. Yeah, so this was decades in the making, and he was already comfortable using this language of occultism. And so after you find the rituals of or the collection of these sacred items, you can realize that he must be using them in some form or fashion. And then can you talk about the cloth that he collected from Mecca, and also the architecture of the building on the island as well, and how those can be connected?
Sure. Yeah. So I went through originally, I went through the petroglyphs. I kind of found a reasonable theory as to what he was doing. From there, I moved to the ranch, connected it to L. Ron Hubbard, who I knew was a Crowleyist. And then I started going through his other properties. And specifically, the island on Little St. James is just chock-a-block full of really sickening kind of occult images and designs and all sorts of different stuff. What I did first was there was an article about his original building plans, about how he got it approved by the U.S. Virgin Islands for this music pavilion that he was going to build. And it was like this octagon-shaped building. There's a piano in the middle, and he gets this approved. But then he builds something that's totally different, completely different. So he ends up building this kind of cube, which is symbolically significant in itself. But he paints it very odd colors, right? It's made to stand out. And then he puts this strange dome on the top. So sort of kind of going through the symbology of all these different things. Everybody reads the blue and white stripes as the Israeli flag, which is, I think, accurate. But if you look even further, the inspiration for the Israeli flag colors was the tallit, which is the prayer shawl that you see people wear at the Wailing Wall. It's been around for thousands of years. It's either blue or white or black and white, but the blue and white is representative of, the white is representative of God or heaven, and then the blue is representative of a ladder that you can climb towards heaven. So it's this kind of symbolic color system that he employs for his building, for this temple, but it's also the inspiration for the Israeli flag. So that's how people kind of make the connection there. And the other thing that he does is he puts this golden dome up on top. And the golden dome is quite clearly a direct reference to the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. The Dome of the Rock is the big golden dome that you see on top of the Temple Mount. So the Temple Mount is the area where Muslims believe that the Prophet Muhammad ascended into heaven during his night journey. So it's one of the most holy sites in Islam, and connected to it is the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is a very important mosque for them. So what was interesting to me at this point was that he was mixing traditions. So neither of these are explicitly Crowley, but he was mixing traditions. And I forgot to mention something at the Zora Ranch. There's another article that I found about a missing church bell called the Las Trompas Death Bell. The Las Trompas Death Bell was a bell in a mission church in the 1730s. I would have to check that, but I think it's the 1730s. And it gets stolen during a renovation in the 1930s. And this bell has been missing. And there are several reports that Epstein had this bell at his properties, that somehow it had resurfaced after, you know, nearly 100 years missing, and it had resurfaced at Epstein's ranch. So I knew that he was collecting artifacts from different religions. And what was interesting to me about this death bell is that it was only rung during Catholic funeral masses. So it had a lot of, it's a strange thing to want in your house. It's a strange kind of item that you would be interested in putting in your house, as well as these petroglyphs. And so I was like, man, it seems like he's kind of collecting things. So I started going through some of the other items that he collected. So I found a few things. The first thing was the Kishwa. So the Kishwa is the black and gold cloth that covers the Kaaba in Mecca. So the Kaaba is the first house of worship that supposedly Adam built. It goes away in the flood. Abraham rebuilds. And this is the holiest site in Islam, is in Mecca. And inside of, it's actually in the corner of the Kaaba, is this black stone. And it's a very important stone to the Muslims because it was originally pure white. It was given to Adam, and then it absorbs so much sin, it turns black. But you'll see videos of Muslims trying to touch the stone. You'll see them all kind of, when you see them circling this black cube, that is the Kaaba. The Kishwa is the cloth that covers the Kaaba, and they replace it every year. But it's extremely hard to get a hold of a piece of it, and it's a high honor. Somehow, Epstein convinces some businesswoman to get a piece of this Kishwa and mail it to him. And he mails it to his Florida address. It's mixed in with fake pieces of the Kishwa, which he kind of gets it through customs saying it's an art piece. You shouldn't even be allowed to ship this. And then he moves it to his island. And he's kind of doing this. And there's also some stuff that I didn't put in the documentary. Like there was a piano tuner that came out to the temple at one point, and he says that he has a painting of the Pope hanging inside. He didn't remember which Pope, but he seems to be collecting different pieces of religious artifacts that he is either putting in his Zora Ranch property or in this property. And it spoke to me that he was trying to, there's a principle in a lot of these groups called the law of contagion. And it's a name added later, but the principle is basically that the prayers or the intentions or the energy of people who pray into an item or it's a relic of a religion, it carries the energy of everybody who has prayed into it. And so the woman who gave the Kishwa to Epstein actually told him that it had been prayed and actively touched by 10 million Muslims in active prayer. And that was important to him. And he also made a point when he was collecting the petroglyphs, telling his staff to make sure to collect petroglyphs with drawings on them. He wants the most religious rocks. He doesn't want just any rock. He wants the religious ones. He wants the prayer, you know, he wants the cloth that's been touched by 10 million Muslims. He wants a death bell that has had 170 years worth of grief of Catholics burying their loved ones. He's collecting these kind of very charged items to install in his properties. And all of that stuff kind of matters as you get into some of the deeper symbolism of these properties and what I think he was trying to do.
Right. And so he's like an energy eater. Like he wants to consume it in order to not only maximize his power, but I imagine maximize his protection as well, given that he was involved in all of these things that were clearly illicit. While you were talking, I looked back at my notes, and yeah, there is a lot of information that Epstein was obsessed with embryo research, genetics, and eugenics. He had a stated desire to reproduce on a large scale. He wanted to improve the human gene pool, and he had reported plans to inseminate women at the ranch, specifically
really?
There, to start there. Like, I'm insulated here. I've surrounded myself with these powerful objects. I can do this here. And, you know, what would he then do with the humans that he reproduced? They would be, I don't think that he would see them as, oh, this is, you know, my tribe, my children. I don't know. I really don't know. But it's clear that he needed not just to feed on this power, but strong protection. And it didn't work. It brought him down in the end.
Yeah, what thankfully.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple things there. So on the Zora Ranch property, and this wasn't in the documentary either. I had to kind of make choices on the strength of the evidence. But there was a radio station host who received some email that gets forwarded to the FBI. It's in the Epstein files. You can pull it. But according to this guy, he got an email from a member of Epstein's staff. It was some sort of whistleblower. And according to this guy, he alleges that two women died during, quote, rough fetish sex nearby these petroglyphs, near the hills where the petroglyphs would be located. So I think that they were already experimenting with this idea. Who knows if that's true? I know that New Mexico is supposedly looking into this supposed crime. I suspect that it probably is true. The other thing that I should probably mention there in terms of him being interested in this is the temple itself has kind of an architectural twin that he is pulling from, and it's called the Hammam Yalbuga Bathhouse, and it is a 15th century building out of the Aleppo, Syria, and it is a bathhouse that was built, but the particular thing about the Mamluks, this military caste, is that they would take and steal children as slaves to fight in their wars. So mm-hmm. they were known for child slaves, and they were also known for castrating people. So that makes a lot of sense to me that he would use something so horrible as kind of his architectural building plan for this bathhouse in, you know, direct opposite of what he gave to the builders. I mean, he had what he gave to them, he had a very different plan from the beginning on what he wanted to do with that temple.
Right. And so you astutely point out that the doors on the temple are fake. They lock from the inside, or from the outside rather, not the inside. So that tells you, that gives you a sense of the fact that people could be locked in there, that they couldn't get out. And if whatever we're surmising happened inside of there, it was like some kind of, you know, death chamber or torture chamber or something like that. What is the purpose of that? We've talked a lot about adrenochrome is what, you know, they're talking about is like when someone's afraid and you're doing something horrible to them, you absorb the power of their fear hormones. Is there more to it than that?
Well, so there's a couple things there. So it's hard to tell from the images. I don't know if they even had a door. It looks like if they had a door to the temple at all, it was probably on the south side facing the water, but it doesn't look like a regular door. This was the point for me in my investigation that was the full unlock of his intentions. So I was unaware before I started looking into this that the door that you see on Epstein's temple, it's the big wooden door that's, you know, arched. And I was unaware that that door is not real. It is completely fake. It's painted on. So it is an illusion of a door that is just a flat wall. And I thought that was extremely odd. The second thing that I noticed about this door is that it has like an old school latch lock, like you would imagine like a, you know, medieval king or something would have on a door. But he put the latch on the wrong side of the door. And granted, it is painted, but I think it's a real symbolic significance to put a lock on the outside of the door, because if you have the lock on the outside, it's an invitation to come. It's a door, but it's locking people in, right? So, and I think symbolically that's very important. And from that point, I was aware of the directional significance to a lot of these people in terms of how you build a temple. And I figured out that this door actually faces north, and this is a direct Crowley practice. This comes from, again, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, his first group, and it's actually origins are much older than that. But according to these people, the direction that you face a temple is extremely, extremely important. So it tells the spirit world your intentions in terms of what you want to do with this temple. And Epstein chooses to face this fake door pointed north. And there's a few different kind of ways that you can read this. And this is kind of what I'm talking about when I'm saying Epstein was highly knowledgeable in these areas, much more than you would anticipate.
Right.
Because what the northward facing door, there's a few different ways to read this. In the Order of the Golden Dawn, Crowley's first group, they assign this to the angel Uriel, and each of the cardinal directions are assigned to different angels or different, you know, demons or different like elements. And so he could have just chosen one, but there's older traditions that the Golden Dawn pulls from that assigns it specifically to demons. So it kind of tells you his intention. So he was probably familiar with that. The other thing that was kind of telling for me is that there are... In medieval baptism, so there's kind of this older folk tradition. It's not officially a tradition of the church, but it's well documented. And you can actually, if you go to England, you'll see evidence of this. So in older Christian traditions, they associate the direction north with the fall of man, with demons, with evil. And so that when they would perform medieval baptisms, they would actually open the northward-facing door to let the demon out that was attached to the child before the baptism. And they call it the devil's door. So even if you go to England now, you'll find super old churches where they've actually like walled up this devil's door and they've bricked over it. And given his interest in, he had the photo of the Pope and he had this death bell, I think it's fair to assume that he was probably familiar with this, given his knowledge of all of these things. It's a signal to me that he was probably facing this temple north because he had dark intentions. This gets a little in the weeds in terms of the magic symbolism, but he has these two pillars inside, and one is straight and one is twisted. And this is kind of a callback to Kabbalah and Freemasonry, where they have in the Tree of Life, they have different sides that how you travel through this Tree of Life. And there's the side of severity or like evil, and then there's the side of mercy and good. One of the pillars is Boaz, is the left side. It's a dark, straight pillar. It's the black pillar. And so that can also tell you that the column of Boaz is connected to the cardinal direction of north. And that's a direct quote from the Bible. So it's telling you, even when he's facing this temple north, that he has an intention he's connecting it to the pillars directly inside, and he's connecting it to the northward facing pillar, which is the evil pillar. It's the left-hand side. It's the evil side of all of this different work that he's doing. That's what I'm saying. There's like in the documentary, I make it much more clear for anybody who's interested, but it's a very confusing kind of set of ideas, because they're all kind of swapping and mixing. But he's using it. He's very knowledgeable in terms of what he's doing. And it's a really dark picture that you get out of this, that he was extremely knowledgeable, and he's pursuing this left-hand path to summon demons or to interact with these evil demons to protect him or to give him favor in some capacity.
Yeah. It scares me a little because I see elements of this in modern day feminism right now. The conversation for women in their, you know, 20s to 40s is, you have this ancient power as well, and modern day life doesn't recognize your power, so you need to go searching through ancient rituals and collect them in your house. And so we see, you know, it starts with an affinity to tarot, and then you're into crystals, and then you're into all of these things that you think is, you know, anti-society, and you think it's elevating your personal power. But I don't think people realize how it comes from these characters who did not, it's not a grassroots movement. Once I started to see, you know, Ouija t-shirts at Target, you're realizing, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, this is connected to something darker. These women don't quite understand the way they're being manipulated into something that's extremely dangerous. And once you see reflections of it in the Epstein files, you need to realize that you need to be careful. And that's my own story as well, because, you know, it starts at Oprah Winfrey's Super Soul Sunday as a gateway drug. And then you go down. I'm getting emotional talking about this, but
No, I was just going to say that it's even when you get into the weeds on these people, they mix and match, and they kind of pick up what they want. But Aleister Crowley specifically considered himself the reincarnation of the guy who created tarot. So the guy who created tarot, his name is Alephus Levi. Let me double check that. Yeah, Alephus Levi. So tarot originally was just a sort of card game that they had, and there are kind of 22 primary cards, and he actually is the first guy that maps it to the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life. And this guy is particularly evil. It's all kinds of really horrible things that he was involved in. But he dies the same year that Aleister Crowley is born. And Aleister Crowley considers himself the reincarnated form of this guy. This is the guy who popularizes Baphomet, the goat-headed demon that you see kind of on the Satanist symbols and things of that nature. That all comes out of this one guy that Crowley is kind of picking up the lineage from. So his order is mixing tarot, Kabbalah, Hermeticism. They're mixing all of these things, and out of that, spinoffs of Crowley, you get Wicca, which he was the guy who created Wicca, was a member of Crowley's OTO sex magic group.
Is
You
that Gerald
have,
Gardner that you're talking
I
about?
think so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You have, out of that, you have the three different, or I guess two out of the three branches of Satanism are direct Crowley ripoffs, and some of them are still active today. There's a lot of it's they're all connected, right? And even in when you get into the New Age stuff is really a spinoff of Theosophy from health, Blavatsky. They're all connected. So I agree. I think, and that's kind of the point of my channel, right? Is I tend to go and most of my stuff is not nearly this dark. A lot of it's just a lot more fun than this. This is like the darkest video I've ever made. But the
Well, you got
symbol.
me hooked. I guess I'm a dark person. I was like, I must know more about this.
The symbols, I agree that whether or not you fully understand what you're participating in, the symbols themselves have a function to them. And so the function has a form, and you are participating, even if you don't understand and you think you just bought a tarot card packet at, Barnes and Noble or whatever. There's like a very dark lineage to this that you should be aware of, and I don't think you should be involved in it at all. I think it's very dangerous, but this stuff has symbols, and these people think that, like, even if you're not religious, I'm a Christian, but this stuff carries meaning. It's like it's beyond just like communicating that you're like edgy or something. It actually has a functional meaning in the world. The whole world is symbols, and that's how we communicate with each other. It's how we communicate ideas. And I think it matters a lot more than people assume, even if you're not religious, which, I think you should be, but it gets
Right.
heavy when you get into the history of it.
But it feels a bit like a funnel or a trap because
Yeah.
it's presented as personal empowerment. And then you see how dark that can get. I was just seeing recently that Disney's putting out this new cartoon, full feature film called Hexed.
I
And
saw that.
oh, let me guess, it is powerful person who's ostracized by society. And then in the end, you realize society needs to recognize her. She doesn't need to change. She's got special powers. And it acts as a gateway drug, right? And so you start looking for ways that you are powerful through the crystals, through the tarot, and you don't realize what you're connected to has been pushed to you by dark figures. And it scares me. Something that you did beautifully in your documentary, and I don't want you to give this away because I want people to watch it for themselves, is you give these two historical examples of other Epstein-like figures in ancient France who were accused of doing rituals like just like this. People died. They're eating them. They're all kinds of, they're sexually abusing them to their death, and they were protected by the crown and the elite. And so, I guess what I want to ask you is, now that we know this, we have several historical figures, including a modern day one, who is Epstein, who I don't think any of us think that he was the center of this. He was a participant in it. Have we now given consent because we know it now? And how do you think it is playing out in the modern world now that nobody has been prosecuted or stopped? And I'm asking for conjecture.
I mean, I don't think it's good.
Yeah,
I would
it
hate to
can't
say that
be. It can't be good.
we gave consent because obviously we were not participants in it. I think it's a mix of things. I am encouraged that people seem really disturbed by all this, and they want justice, which is great. As far as I think things are going to get worse before they get better. I don't see the second part of this, the Epstein files, getting released anytime soon.
Yeah.
I think they know, and there's a case, and I would love to hear what you think about this. There was a case that I didn't include in this documentary. Are you familiar with the Finders cult?
No.
Okay. This is just a horrible story. So this is 1987, I believe. Three guys in Tallahassee, Florida, arrested. They have several children with them. The children haven't been fed. They're described as feral. They don't understand normal things. They don't know what telephones are. They don't know what normal words are. They don't know how to use toilets. So the Florida police looks into this and they find a group out of Washington, D.C. It's a cult called the Finders. And it was started by a guy named Marion Petty or Petit. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but he was a master sergeant in the army, I believe. He's connected to intelligence. His wife works for the CIA. His son works for the CIA. It's a intelligence connected family, but they find warehouses. They have tons and tons of children in there. Across their properties, they find these telex machines that are hooked up to multiple outlets across the world in basically every single country. They got these guys dead to rights. There's occult altars in these buildings. They have all kinds of videotapes of them harming animals and doing satanic rituals and things of that nature. They have everything. Before it can go to trial, the CIA steps in and says that it is an internal CIA matter, and they shut down the entire case. And it's a near mirror of the Epstein thing, and it's another case that I think is occult in nature. My gut tells me, that this might be some sort of extension of like an MK Ultra type program. Not that it is MK Ultra in design, but that I think they might be interested in these occult people in a very serious capacity. And whether it be Epstein or the Finders, there's a real connection to a worldwide network that is hyper connected to people above them, banking families, and things of that nature. I think there's a real shot that the CIA is directly involved in seeking occult people for this type of work. My hope with all of this stuff, with my documentary, is that it will give people kind of a new line to look into, because I think it's a real, a fresh take to kind of look into different groups of people that may be connected to this, because it's not new. There's the Mark Dutroux case that I talk about in the documentary. That's like a near mirror to Epstein, and it's much worse than I said in the documentary. He accuses, multi, millionaire, billionaire people on the stand in his trial of being involved with him. This, rich guy that he accuses, Michelle Nyho, gets the judge removed. The cop who helps get some of these girls killed, he gets promoted. Everybody around this case dies. I mean, it's dark, and I think it is global. It's interesting as far as your question about what it means for us. I hope that it's galvanizing for people to, go to church, number one, and then number two is like, I think we can get justice, and I think there will be, people didn't know about this. Nobody wanted to believe any of this stuff 10 years ago. The world has totally changed. And I'm hopeful that just the knowledge of it wakes more and more people up. And at some point, I think the good does win. It's just going to take a long time.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I go back and forth for what I actually believe it's supposed to mean for us to do and what's the end. I pray every night for these dark power systems to collapse on themselves, and I don't know what that means in practicality. And so that's all I can say. But at the end of the day, the more we know, the less we can mess with it too. And I'm a mother of three. I don't want my children to like step in things that are connected to this accidentally because it's very present in our world. And that's another thing that you do beautifully, because like you said, Epstein is not your main research. You research all of these symbols in the world. The Sphinx prophecy, I found interesting. The billionaires who are responding to these ancient prophecies and getting bunkers, why these things exist. And so we're just normies, you and I. And we don't want to step in the poo that's out there that is for us. We're supposed to be stepping into it. They're making it so that we participate in ways that we don't want to, maybe. right? And so that's why I find your channel so interesting.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I my main goal with the channel in general was, I was really, growing up, was really interested in the work of Joseph Campbell, and it's the hero of a thousand faces. And
sure.
Every culture has its own hero myth, and they kind of all mirror each other. And I think you see that throughout history, right? These people talk about different things, and they just kind of manifest in different ways. And there's a lot of this stuff that we think is silly, or there's an odd story that we don't really understand. And most of the time, it's happened before in history, and you can actually just look backwards and kind of decode it and say these people aren't crazy, or this has actually happened before. And that's really my intention with it, is that, you know, I cover a lot of kind of odd stuff, but it's like framed through, we've seen this, you know, five different times throughout history, and this is the way different people talk about it. And there's a lot of, I think it brings light to kind of these odd things that are hard to understand when you see, like, oh, people have been struggling with this strange story for 1,000 years, and this is how they describe it.
Right. Well, I, again, want to highly recommend the Taylor McMahon YouTube channel. You also have an Instagram and other platforms, as well as you can go to tayjmcm.com to find them. So thank you for taking the time to talk about this with me. I found it fascinating. I hope we get to talk again.
Yeah, absolutely. One quick note. After I put out that YouTube video, it was doing great, and then it kind of totally shut off. And video has been largely removed from search. So if you want to see the Epstein documentary, you need to go directly to my page. Don't search for the video directly, because you can't find it currently.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm familiar with being shadow banned. The actual title of it is Occult Rituals in the Epstein Files.
Yeah. So just go to my page, because if you search, it's going to be hard to find.
Shocker. Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you again. It really was a pleasure. I hope you'll stay in touch with me, because I just really love your content.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.